This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. Ashley Rhodes Cortera spent 10 years in the foster care system. She moved through 14 different placements, some of which were violent. And she spent time in residential care facilities, otherwise known as orphanages. She was eventually adopted, went on to high school and college, and now is a parent herself. But while many people call her a great American success story, Ashley is quick to note that she is very much the exception. The statistics about children in foster care are staggering, and her own life since foster care also has not been all rainbows and sunshine. The trauma and challenges of her childhood continue to have an impact today and inspire her to devote her life to advocating for those who haven't had the same opportunities. She chronicled her life journey in two memoirs, Three Little Words and Three More Words. And she joins us now in our studio. Ashley Rhodes Cortera, welcome back. Good to have you on The State of Things.
Thank you for having me.
Tell us about, you spent 10 of your first 12 years in foster care. Tell us about that experience.
Well, as you said, I spent almost 10 years in care. And during that time, I had 14 different foster placements. So I later learned that almost 25% of my foster parents were or became convicted felons. Needless to say, I was not placed in the most ideal circumstances. I was in homes with people who had problems with drugs, alcohol, violence, pedophilia. It was not so pleasant. But eventually, I was adopted from a group home when I was 12, and I was very, very lucky to have an incredible adoptive family that was able to give me that stability and permanency that really helped me thrive. And so now I've dedicated my life to ensuring that stories like mine don't have to happen, that children don't have to wait in foster care without permanency, without support systems. And I really hope that the end of my story is a really inspiring opportunity for people to see that there are countless ways to help, but that also I want to inspire people who are working within the child welfare system or the education system, because these can be such thankless, difficult, heartbreaking jobs. But it's really important for people to see the happy side of some of these darker instances, because otherwise there wouldn't be anyone there to speak for children.
You are now able to look back and reflect, and you reflect fondly on that permanent home that you had when you were adopted. But the story of those three little words is the story of the actual adoption yourself, and it's a kind of bittersweet tale. Will you tell
it us? It is. So everyone always asks me, well, what are the three little words? And I often joke that, well, it's read the book, because I feel like if I spoil it, I'm just going to get all kinds of spoiler hate mails. So I will say that everyone assumes that it's I love you, but it's not. The words that I said on my adoption day definitely were not I love you, because when I was adopted, I had seen so many children be adopted and sent back, just exchanged like clothing that didn't fit properly. And so adoption didn't mean happily ever after. It wasn't rainbows and sunshine. It was terrifying. I had had so many disappointments in my life and so many adults who said they would do things and never did. And I had a really difficult time trusting that this was going to be happily ever after. I didn't even know what that looked like. In fact, my family was so wonderful, it was almost too good to be true. And I had been told my entire life that I wasn't worthy, and I was going to be just this useless waste of space. So when I was faced with this opportunity to really have a meal with a family every night and a bed to sleep in and a school to go to and these opportunities for normalcy, it was really scary.
I think people who haven't had your experience would think, okay, now finally that's over. You'll have all the things you just described, and you can make your way to a happy life. But it would take time, it seems to me, to begin to trust. And I would understand if you didn't trust even them, if they consistently loved you and consistently showed you nothing.
Absolutely.
But, well, and I can understand. How long did it take you to actually?
Well, in my first book, there's an entire chapter called Testing, Testing. And I pushed every button these people had. Needless to say, I was not always the polished young person that I am today. But it was really difficult, and it took years for me to really believe that these people weren't going anywhere. And no matter what I did or how awful I was, it got to a point where I was like, man, I can't get rid of these people. And it became this exercise in them showing me time and time again what that love and dedication and commitment and what family really looked like. And that was when I was able to really heal. But admittedly, I think we became even closer when I went away to college. Because when I was in college, because I had a family, I had somewhere to go when my dorms closed for Christmas and summer and spring break. And the running joke is that we also, my adoptive mother is Jewish, so we get to celebrate both Hanukkah and Christmas. And so, you know, my first Hanukkah, she gave me one sock one night and the matching sock the next night. And I was like, what is this? This is ridiculous. But, you know, now I have these family stories and these funny tales to tell. And not a lot of kids have that. Even kids that have aged out of foster care, and let's say they're lucky enough to get to go to college, they're homeless again.
Well, let's talk about it. I mean, you have said that your story is unique. The statistics about children in foster care are staggering. 50% or less actually graduate from high school. So half graduate, and fewer than 10% actually go on to a higher education.
Yeah, well, and 3% or less will receive a bachelor's degree. And here in North Carolina, there are 10,000 children in foster care. And we are seeing a huge increase in the length of time that children are staying in foster care and the number of children who are aging out of foster care, which means they turn 18, 21, and they have no one. They have nowhere to go. We're very lucky that we have laws and legislation that's being passed that recognizes the very special needs of this population. But without support systems, without communities, these kids end up as teen parents. They end up homeless. They end up incarcerated, hooked on drugs. And they get into abusive relationships. And it's a cycle of abuse repeated over and over and over without someone intervening. And we just have to be embracing these children as a community, because our numbers show us that if we don't deal with these kids now, we're just going to deal with them in the next welfare system.
Well, you're talking about the kids and their outcomes, but I'm also thinking about your experience. 25% of your foster homes were inhabited by convicted felons. How typical is that? And sort of what does that tell us about our foster care system at large?
I think one of the big problems is that we are underfunded. We don't have nearly enough training or support or education. But we also are constantly in a state of crisis. We don't have enough foster homes to go around. We don't have nearly enough adoptive families. Our turnover rate of social workers is very high because this is an unbelievably difficult job. I mean, a social worker is, in many states, an entry-level position. But your first day on the job, fresh out of college, ready to change the world, your first case might be a dead infant. And, you know, how do you combat that without an appropriate support system? So it's really tough. But that's why I'm so excited to be here celebrating with the Children's Home Society, because they're an organization locally that across the state is doing incredible work, and they're recognizing the needs of families and children and this very specialized population. And I get to travel all across the country to see different systems and what people are doing. So when I was asked to come here, it was really exciting because they are doing tremendously progressive work, and they've changed over the years to accommodate the needs of families and children and to implement really innovative programming to ensure that children get to stay within their own families, that family gets support that they need, training, education, to make sure that kids aren't lingering in foster care. They're not aging out of the system with nobody. So that's what's really unique about the Children's Home Society.
It does seem that there's a big cultural divide here, just in terms of our perception. If we have not been in foster care, how we perceive the system, how we perceive the children in it. I mean, maybe it's a telling story, perhaps, when you were perhaps a residential facility and asked to appear on a Christian television program. And, you know, the host asked you, you know, how you imagined an adoptive family, should you ever be adopted. Can you tell that? That's not a spoiler alert. You can tell that.
No,
that's
no.
That's not your through.
For me, it was, I was happy with anyone that would love me. And the idea that I could have a family, and I wrote a little essay contest for this adoption magazine, and on my little poem on the front said, I would love a family, rich or mid, as long as they want a loving kid. If they love me and care for me, that's all I want in a family. And I wrote that when I was about 8 years old. And that was my plea to just have someone out there that would see me as a daughter and care for me. But as I grew up and I became a social worker and a foster parent myself, my husband and I have cared for over 20 foster kids. So I'm very in touch with what the needs are currently. But it's been so interesting to learn more about my own story. And the reality is that my mother was a single teen mother living in foster care herself when she got pregnant with me. So it was this cycle of abuse. She didn't have education or family or a support system. And that's why I love what the Children's Home Society is doing, because it's empowering these parents who do not have a blueprint for what a family structure looks like. And they're helping to break that cycle of abuse, which is so important to achieving outcomes like mine and really saving kids.
Can this be done by working with the current foster care system and simply educating families and perhaps generating more interest? Or does there need to be a kind of complete? Because you were, as you say, in the foster care, so you were foster parents. And I know that you had some serious reservations about what was going on while you were a part of that system. Right?
Absolutely. Well, when I was in foster care, I was placed in homes that were sometimes worse than what was happening with my birth family. But then when we became foster parents, we were pretty shocked at the conditions that kids were being sent home in, and that was absolutely alarming. But as foster parents, we also understand how powerful that reunification process is and what a gift it is to be able to reunite a family. So when we were able to step in and help be mentors and serve as an example and really help these families, even if no one else was, that was amazing. At the same time, I think we really need to be sure that we are putting the children first. Their lives have got to be our priority, and they don't have 10 years to wait for a parent to get over an addiction or extreme violence. And I think we have to be surrounding children with numerous people who care about them. And I personally don't care about the labels of adoption or guardianship or kinship. I am so lucky that I have an incredible adoptive family that saved me, but I also have relationships with many members of my birth family. And so no child can ever have too many people in their life who care about them. And I think once we start recognizing the role that all of these different relationships can have, it does nothing but strengthen a child.
I wonder how you approach this business of advocacy, because I find myself uncomfortable at the moment talking about the outcomes. I've got these statistics. They need to be out there. It's part of the public discourse. And if anything's going to change, it's going to be because we know about these terrible outcomes. At the same time, I'm imagining myself now as a foster child listening to Frank Stachow sentencing me to a life of crime and despair and bad outcomes. And I've just been sentenced on public radio. So clearly we have to talk about this. How do we do this in a way that doesn't, in some ways, stigmatize those people who are part of the system?
Well, I'm one of those people. I'm a child that was in foster care. And I think my story, not only now that I'm an adult, full disclosure, I did just turn 30. So
congratulations.
I'm no longer that little foster child, but I am a social worker and a mother and an adoptive mother and a foster mother. But first and foremost, I was a former foster child. I spent almost a decade of my life growing up in this system. And I hope that as I now turn a little bit more away from, no one wants to hear an adult like, oh, I was abused as a child. Like, that's no longer, I think, a part of what motivates me. For me, it's that next step. You can't complain about something if you're not willing to be a part of the solution. But while I'm on my journey and my path to create change, I hope that other young people or anyone who's struggling with any kind of adversity sees me as an example of triumph and overcoming. And most importantly, the next step. Because awful things happen to so many of us, but it's what we do with those experiences that ultimately define us, that help grow a society. And my story is just a living example that you don't have to be one of those statistics at all.
We are talking about ways to change the foster care system today on The State of Things. Ashley Rhodes Cortere is with me today, author of Three Little Words and Three More Words. So what does it mean in terms of public policy? I think you've described pretty well the ways that we need to strengthen relationships and put more attention on the kinds of families that children go into, the sort of relationships they develop. In terms of public policy, what does that mean here in the state of North Carolina? What would it look like? What would you ask the North Carolina General Assembly to do?
Well, we're seeing a tremendous shift. So when I was in care, all of the funds that were allocated could only be used for this notion of stranger care. Foster care was the only option. There were no funds or resources available to support families, even young mothers like myself. So when I was in care, people were being paid to abuse me. And so if my mother had been given even a fraction of the support that was being paid to these other people, perhaps she could have gotten our family together. So I think that mentality is really being adopted, no pun intended, more so in today's thinking. And so we are seeing funds being freed to do a lot of family preservation, to do prevention. And it's been a really long road to see that actualize. hospitalized, because it's a bit of a hard concept to wrap your head around. But I'm loving that across the country and here in North Carolina with the Children's Home Society, they're utilizing these really creative family-centered techniques that meet the individual needs of a family, not just this blanket policy that all kids have to go into this notion of stranger care. They're really tailoring their treatment focus to see what they can do for that child, for that family, and they are pulling out all the stops and all of the resources to make sure that that happens and that they can preserve these families.
I'm curious to know how this has affected you as a mother. You are a mother now, and I wonder about the way you mother and child rearing, and whether or not any of the trauma of your past has sort of played a part in the way you do you respond to your children?
Well, what's so interesting is so my husband and I fostered right after we got married, and so we've had over 20 foster children. But today we have two biological sons and an adopted son. So our boys are 2, 3, and 4, which is
you got no time to think about any of it.
It's a little bit intense. But when I was growing up, I always felt I know your listeners can't see me, but I have red hair. So I always saw myself as this kind of feisty survivor, and you know, going through high school and college, but when I started to become a mother and look into that role, that's really, frankly, when some of this stuff started to hit me. Yes, I wrote 3 little words and I relived my trauma, but I was kind of removed from it to a degree. But now when I look at my little boys, I think, holy cow, I was in foster care going through all of these things, and I look at their little faces and I almost can't believe it. So becoming a mother definitely has been an exercise in me reliving trauma or thinking about things that I haven't thought about in years. But what's kept me on track and what's amazing is that I have an amazingly supportive husband. I'm incredibly close with members of, again, my adoptive family, my birth family. So I am so lucky that I have this tremendous support system around me. And that really fuels the work that I do, finding support systems for kids.
Ashley Rhodes Cortere is a social worker, public speaker, and author of the memoirs 3 Little Words and 3 More Words. Thank you so much for being on our program.
Oh, happily. Thank you.
You can hear Ashley speak at a fundraising event at the Children's Home Society tomorrow in Greensboro, Thursday, May 5th in Raleigh, and then May 12th in Charlotte. And if you missed that, we've got it on our website, stateofthings.org. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stacia.